So, in the book, The Eye of the Storm, Embracing Conflict, Creating Peace, Reverend Gary Simmons tells the story of his Taekwondo student, 9-year-old Scott, who had recently earned his black belt. Gary asked him what that meant to him, saying, "You know, it has no power of its own. It can't protect you or help you get good grades in school. What does it mean to you, Scott?" And Scott replied, "Well, you see, before I became a black belt, when someone pushed me around, I either had to run away or fight because I was afraid. Now that I'm a black belt, I can just walk away." And Reverend Gary said that young Scott showed great insight in understanding that he did not have to fight, but could be in conflict and still stay connected to his wholeness, where we always have choices and options revealed to us. Today's daily word was on guidance, and that's perfect. So whether our challenges are with situations or with other people, most of us try to avoid conflict because it seems unnatural or even fearful. But conflict is actually our friend because, Reverend Gary writes, it brings us to the very edge of resourcefulness where we discover what we are really made of. And as we turn to that power within, our doubts and fears reveal themselves not as weaknesses, but as areas of infinite possibilities. There's an ancient Chinese saying, "Embrace tiger, return to mountain." Now, when a tiger crosses our path, our instinctive response is not to embrace it, right? It is to flee, fight, or freeze. After all, we have been scratched, chewed on, and eaten up by tigers in our lives, have we not? So, the question is, how do we learn to embrace tiger and return to mountain? Gary says the answer lies in knowing our wholeness and worth. Returning to mountain symbolizes returning to that spiritual center within, the eye of the storm, that place of peace and harmony and love. The ancients believed that this could only be accomplished by becoming fully present to life, and that means facing and embracing our tigers. When we remember that our conflicts with others, and actually with situations too, can help us see where we are not connected to our wholeness, then we see those conflicts, we use them to discover new dimensions about ourselves. We can, in every situation, move from our heads, our intellect, to our hearts, our Christ center, and know that we can never be separate from the one presence and our oneness with all that is. In her book, The Eye of the Storm for Teens, Jane Simmons asks, "Well, if there's only oneness and no one is truly against us, then how is it that enemies and adversaries are created?" And here is her answer. She says, "This happens because we see our lives through our own perceptions and actually our own judgments. And some of our perceptions are actually misconceptions based on past experiences and conditioning. We project our own meaning and relevance to events, circumstances, and personal interactions. This is classic Unity Principle number 3. Thoughts have creative power to determine events and attract experience." It's all about the power of our thinking. We see things as we are, not as they are. Last week, I was in the grocery store in a big hurry because I wanted to go visit my brother, who was in a rehab hospital. My brother had a stroke recently, and I wanted to get down there as quickly as possible because visiting hours are very limited. Well, in the main aisle of the store, right in front of me, an older man was moving at a snail's pace. Bent over his small cart, he stopped at every single aisle, talking to himself. Now, honestly, I'd like to stand here today and tell you that I went right to the eye of the storm. But the truth was, I did not. My thinking started racing, and I thought to myself, why doesn't he come in the morning when it's time for seniors? Why does he keep stopping at the end of each aisle? How inconsiderate. He's going to make me late. Never mind that I probably hadn't given myself enough time. That was not in my head. When the aisle finally cleared, where I could bypass him at a safe distance, I realized why he was moving so slowly. He was pushing the cart with one hand, and with the other hand, struggling to push a wheelchair, holding a woman I assumed to be his wife. And at the end of every single aisle, he was leaning over, lovingly asking her if there was anything in that aisle that she needed. My heart went out to both of them, and my perspective changed immediately. And that's what happens when we know more of the story. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. There's a saying that seeing is believing, but actually, research has proven that believing is seeing. Our misperceptions block us from seeing what is really true. Studies show that our beliefs affect not only how we interpret the events of our lives, but even the data we take in. How many of us sometimes feel like there's just too much data for our brains to hold? Anybody but me? That's my big excuse when I forget something. You know, my brain's too full. But in this era of information overload, it's true. Our brains are not able to take everything in. And so they selectively filter information. And guess what? We take in the data that aligns with our beliefs, and we ignore, don't even see, the data that doesn't uphold our beliefs. So our misconceptions are constantly reinforced again and again in a cycle of bias confirmation. Bob and I had a former next-door neighbor. I'm going to call her Sarah. I'm going to change the names to protect the not innocent. But at any rate, Sarah firmly believed, she had toddlers herself, and she firmly believed that all teenagers were lazy and up to no good. So one day, on the opposite side of us, a family moved in with a six-year-old son. Well, Sarah showed up at my door almost hyperventilating. I'm not kidding you. She is almost screaming, "Have you heard? There goes the neighborhood. That kid will be having wild parties, drinking, and driving up and down the street. None of our kids will be safe." Nothing that I said to her could change that mental model. Now, it turns out that Justin, the 16-year-old, was a great kid, a good student, very polite, and he loved animals. He used to love to come over and help me with my koi pond. Well, one day, Sarah and I were outside having a conversation over the fence, and I noticed that Justin was cutting the grass for his father. So I thought, okay, here's the chance for Sarah to gain some new data. So I said to her, "See Justin over there? See what a great kid he is? He's helping out his family." And you know what her response was? It was, "Oh, he's probably in trouble, grounded for God knows what, and this is part of his punishment." I swear, I wrote it in my journal. I got my journal out and reread it. So you see, we saw the same thing, but we interpreted it differently based on our preconceived ideas. This was on our Facebook page this week. Thank you, Kathy. And it's from Henry David Thoreau, who wrote, "It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see." Now, I have no idea, by the way, where Sarah formed such negative ideas about teens, but I do know the day she released them, it was the day that her sweet little boy turned 13. There again, you have more information, right? So there's a powerful little story about a man on a plane in Nigeria when the aircraft hit bad weather. The turbulence was so dramatic that the man feared that the plane was going to crash and he was going to be killed. Now, he had seen the pilot and co-pilot when he boarded and found himself wishing that they were white men. He worried that the black pilots could not possibly be as competent as white ones. Now, I see some of you shaking your heads, but what makes this story so striking and compelling is the identity of the man with those thoughts. It was absolutely none other than Archbishop Desmond Tutu, a black man and eventually would become a Nobel Prize winner. He tells this story to emphasize the power of societal conditioning to distort, thwart, and limit our perception and cause us to engage in damaging acts sometimes. This awareness, he says, helped him realize that the white ruling class had been brainwashed just as he had been brainwashed, and that understanding helped him lead the struggle against apartheid. So Reverend Jane writes, "The simple act of recognizing how we distort reality through our perceptions can help us move to a place of power. That is essential for every single one of us. If we don't see the meaning that we give to what happens, that it actually shapes our experience, we remain a victim, and we think that we are powerless to bring about change. Any problem on this physical plane can be transformed, but we need to broaden our understanding in order to make that happen. Einstein said, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used to create them. And in our human skins, when we don't see or know something, we will fill in the gaps. We will make it up with what we believe to be true. Jane asks, now think of this in your own life. Have you ever decided that something was true and then built a whole scenario around it? Planned on what you were going to say and do? I think we've all done that, that mental movie in our minds about what's going to happen. And after that, you found out that the way you imagined it was not the way it was at all. It was not necessarily so. That is our power of imagination gone awry. Becoming aware of how we're looking at things through the filter of our beliefs is the first step in freeing ourselves and living from our wholeness. If we don't like what we see on the outside, we simply need to change our point of view. We need to see it differently. You may have heard the story of a large two-engine train full of passengers crossing the county, or the country, actually. At one point, one of the engines fails. No problem, the engineer thought. I'll just use the other one. We'll just continue on at half power. And that worked for a few miles, but further on down the line, the other engine broke down, and the train came to a standstill. Well, the engineer went out to tell the passengers what had happened, announcing, "Ladies and gentlemen, I have some good news and I have some bad news. The bad news is that both engines are out and we're simply going to be stuck here for a while." Well, the sound of rising, angry voices filled the car. Finally, one guy yelled out, "And what could possibly be good news?" "Well," the engineer said, "the good news is you are not in an airplane." I love that story. I'm sure some of you heard it before. Well, at that point, the angry voices melted into laughter, and everyone's perception shifted. As Gandhi said, "Keep your thoughts positive because your thoughts become your words. Keep your words positive because your words become your actions. Keep your actions positive because your actions become your habits. Keep your habits positive because your habits become your values. Keep your values positive because your values, meaning your beliefs, become your destiny." Jane tells the following story. There was once a young man named Joshua who decided to leave his home and family. He began living on the streets and even talked some of his friends into leaving their homes and jobs and joining him. Together they roamed as a gang with only the clothes on their back, and they started hanging out with all the wrong crowds. Sound like trouble? What advice would you give to Josh and his friends? how might we judge their way of life? Well, if you're curious about what happened to them, you can read it all in the Gospels. And you may recognize Josh more by his Greek name, Jesus. It's all the way we look at things, right? So this story helps us see that the mind perceives things that are not necessarily so. And the way we can measure our beliefs and decide if they're true or not is by returning to principle. Our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, defines principle as fundamental, universal, eternal, divine truth, what is spiritually true. We can hold any of our perceptions up to the light of principle and see how they measure up. If we're seeing an adversary, then that alone means we are misseeing, because principle says there is only one presence and one power, and we are all one in that presence. We came here to this earth to be divine principle. We came here to be love. We came here to be peace. Reverend Jane says, we may not be able to change the outer condition, but we can change how we view it and what we carry with us because of it. What's still going on in our minds because of what's happened to us. So how do we use principle to see it right, or as Eric Butterworth says, to see it rightly? We need to get out of our heads where we analyze, compare, intellectualize, and judge, into our hearts, our Christ center, where love sees only oneness and connects us to all of life. We can always move to the eye of the storm, where we will see with our hearts. In the Buddhist tradition, there's a teaching that says we need to place the fearful condition in the cradle of loving kindness. What great advice for us right now. The heart is that cradle, and from there we can ask, how can I see this differently? Through heart-centered vision, we can shift our perception and pronounce it good, leading us to find and create the good in it. We have a choice, thought by thought, moment by moment, to see things through our spiritual eyes. Reverend Jane tells the ancient story of a Sufi trickster named Nasruddin. One day he happened upon a man on the road who was crying. So the trickster stopped and asked the man what was the matter. And the man held up a tiny bag and said, "Everything I own is in this bag. I am so poor. Oh, woe is me." And he wailed on and on and on. Nasruddin grabbed the bag and ran with it until he was out of sight. Then he set the bag on the road and hid behind a rock to see what happened. When the man came along and discovered the bag, he shouted for joy, thanking God for its return. And at this point, the trickster sprang out from behind the rock and asked the man, "How is it that that bag once made you weep and now makes you jump for joy?" Our perspective and our feelings can change in an instant. So anytime we find ourselves reacting defensively, we can ask, what am I telling myself about this event? What am I making this mean? Jane says, when we measure the event against divine principle, we realize that what we are making it mean is the real adversary. Our viewpoint is the real adversary. The mirror tells us how we are showing up. So now I just have to say, this certainly does not mean that we're supposed to discount our feelings or experiences. It means we, in order to heal those false beliefs, we interpret the challenge, any challenge that comes to us, through our heart center. We see it from divine perspective. It takes courage, one of our C words this year, to show up in life knowing that nothing and no one is against us. It also puts a lot of responsibility on us, does it not? There's nobody to blame. We've discussed earlier that the word courage comes from the French word cœur, like in Crèvecœur, meaning heart. And Jane says, following heart principles, we can walk the hero's path, no matter what's happening to us on the physical plane, with faith. So let's come together to volunteer to make it our practice this week to become aware of our thoughts and perceptions, knowing that if we are not aligned in principle, we can change them, we can see it differently. As Paul writes to the Philippians, one of my favorite verses in Scripture, "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and anything worthy of praise, think about these things." By seeing in divine perspective, think about this, we can unlock any door that blocks our freedom, align with our wholeness, bring peace and love to all situations and all relationships, and we can transform the world. This is necessarily so.